a lot of children with FASD are autistic as well, and a lot of the traits are identical. However, autism is a neurodifference. FASD is a brain injury. It's a trauma to the brain. So from day one in education, if the correct scaffolding isn't around them, they are the children who are disciplined for their brain injury every single day.
The current prevalence rates of this condition show that there's possibly one child in every single classroom.
On average, they process around every third word you are saying to them. So they are the children who look like they don't listen in class.
I don't believe that this is a condition that will ever go away, however much we educate, you know, the public health messaging. If we've got midwives telling people and having conversations around alcohol at their 12-week, you know, booking in appointment, it could be too late by then.
Being able to get to school for 9 o'clock in the morning is a massive, massive problem with kids with FASD. So then they are labelled as school refusers. No, they have a brain injury.
Unborn babies will be medically better off if they've been exposed to heroin for 9 months than alcohol.
So if we get that right and keep them engaged in education, then a huge amount of them don't fall into the judicial system. That changes what society looks like. That's a big deal. There isn't a mother on this planet who decides to injure our unborn baby's brain by consuming alcohol. It's either done completely accidentally, has no idea that she's pregnant, or she has a disease where she's unable to stop consuming that alcohol.
Welcome to the Qualified Tutor Podcast. I'm your host, Ludo Miller, and I'll be interviewing tutors and thought leaders from across the tutoring landscape to inspire, inform, and motivate you to become the best tutor you can be. The Qualified Tutor community is a safe and supportive space for tutors who love to learn and grow. We offer training, resources, ideas, and a chance to connect with like-minded tutors. If you'd like to continue the conversation, join our Qualified Tutor Community at www.qualifiedtutorcommunity.org or find it in the show notes.
Well, welcome to this week's episode of the Qualified Tutor Podcast, and a huge welcome to Jessica Rutherford and Claire Devaney-Glynn, the pioneering hosts of the Spotlight on FASD podcast, the UK's first podcast to really focus in on this underreported area of physical and behavioural conditions. So FASD stands for Fetal Alcohol Spectrum Disorders, and covers a wide range of diagnoses related to prenatal exposure to alcohol. And while there are physical and mental problems associated with FASD, with nurturing and support and intervention from educators and carers alike, there is real growing evidence of the learning potential that children with FASD possess. Podcasting is the ultimate space to dive into and draw out the richest conversations in a topic. And you, the lucky listener today, will be hearing from two of the most prominent voices in this area, in the area of FASD. Jessica and Claire, welcome. As podcast hosts yourselves, how does it feel being on the other side of the mic?
It feels a little bit like a holiday, a little bit like, oh, we don't have to sort any of the editing of this, just we get to sit down and talk and don't have to think about the rest of it. But it's nice to be, I love being asked questions. I love it. Mm-hmm. So it's nice to be asked questions, and it's just really, really exciting to be invited onto a podcast, especially that, you know, aimed at education, because that is what we are passionate about, because that's what changes lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's great to see the other side of it and like experience this side of things and get involved with a whole new audience.
Yeah, well, I, as I was saying when we spoke beforehand, this it's highly likely that many of our listeners won't know too much about FASD, so you're bringing a really new and fresh angle to this. So thank you very much. Now, as listeners know by now, and as you two may know, there is a question that we like to begin with, and I'll be incredibly interested to hear the responses to this today. So, Jessica, perhaps we'll start with you. What kind of a student were you?
Average. Very, very.
Okay, now Claire. Average. No.
Honestly, right through school, very average. Sort of getting a B, a C, whatever. Didn't put too much effort in, but was never really in trouble for not putting effort in. Just very average, very average. And I kind of wish that I could go back now and let some of my teachers know that I'm finishing up a PhD.
Yeah. What would you go back and tell yourself if you had started school again?
Probably not much, to be honest, because I don't think that I was in the right place at that time, which is probably not the best thing to be telling teenagers. But I feel like the things that I've learned through my journey, through my 20s and things, has led me to a point where I'm so engaged and so keen to learn and so passionate about what I'm learning. And I know exactly where to focus all of my energy and my attention. So I got away with being average, but I don't think that's good advice.
Yeah, no, this is a lesson. You can't get away with being average, but Jessica managed to, and she's the lucky one. Claire, what about the question to you?
I loved school, and I was pretty much a straight A student, but I think I was very badly organised, and luckily I didn't find a lot of things too difficult. Maths and science, I was rubbish at, but because I made everybody laugh, people liked having us around. But languages were what I loved, what I excelled at. And I loved school. I loved studying. I would love to be able to study now. I would love to be able to have the time to do some learning. But when I look back on my school days now, I see my children. I can pick out my children in what was my year group.
Okay, so history repeats itself, Claire, perhaps, and maybe it's heartening to know that there's someone then in that class who absolutely adores learning and would love to be at school kind of the whole time, even if they find maths and science a little bit tricky. But I guess leading kind of from the journey that Jessica, you were mentioning, that the journey that you've had from school into your 20s and now into your PhD. I'd love to know a little bit more about your journey into hosting a podcast on FASD and the work that you do on FASD these days.
My PhD is actually what led me to FASD. I started my PhD knowing that I wanted to work within education and the arts, combining the two in some way, to work with a population who were in some way disengaged from education or had some sort of, so where education wasn't working for them in some way, basically. And I had this idea of how I wanted to approach that, and my supervisors said, like, you can't help everybody, so you need to narrow it down. And told me to go away and look at all of the different, populations of people who would be typically disengaged from education or would have special educational needs, things like that. And I stumbled across FASD, and there was very little known about it then. This was 2015. There wasn't much out there on the internet, and I went back and I presented it to my supervisors, and they were kind of like, okay, right, you haven't got much of a starting point here. And I was like, no, but this is fascinating, like fascinating to me. I was completely absorbed by this condition. I found it so, so interesting. And then from there, I went on to I got involved in 2017 with a residential summer camp just outside of Chicago for children and young people with FASD, which I later became the assistant director for. And so, you know, I'd done my reading for my PhD, and I then went and got my practical experience from the summer camp. And it's just evolved, really, and it's now become my job. And I've known Claire for a few years now, and Claire and I get together and sit and chat FASD for hours and hours and hours. So one day we decided to hit record and see if anybody else wanted to join the conversation, really, or even listen to
having
a chat.
And now two seasons later, there's 20 episodes about FASD that you can find. That the podcast will be in the show notes below, but for all listeners, it's called The Spotlight on FASD Podcast, and we'll delve into FASD, I guess, much more than just an episode on this podcast can. But I guess, so you two have a background in FASD and obviously have committed the work that you do to FASD so much to the point that you have a podcast, but also, you know, kind of everything that you do day to day feeds into it. So perhaps you could tell our listeners a little bit more about how FASD affects learning, obviously in the scope of tutoring and education.
So children and young people with FASD, they are impacted in ways, in very, very complex ways, actually. Like, the number of variables with FASD is significant. It's a real wide spectrum disorder. However, there are quite a few commonalities that, you know, we can generalize a few things that lead to issues and challenges when it comes to education, particularly around executive functioning issues, a lot of challenges with sensory. We've just actually done three episodes on sensory processing difficulties with FASD. So things like noisy classroom environments or overstimulating environments visually. And then we then bring into that ADHD. So attention, hyperactivity, engagement challenges.
As a mother of children with FASD, if I had to sum up the problem in education, and I hate to use this word, like normal or average, but my children don't look like they have a brain injury. My children don't look like anything is going on. They look perfectly fit and healthy and beautiful and lovely clean clothes and Nike trainers and lovely backpacks, and that they don't look like vulnerable children, and they don't look like they have a disability. So from day one in education, if the correct scaffolding isn't around them, they are the children who are disciplined for their brain injury every single day and punished for their brain injury. So they can't sit still. They will say whatever is on their mind, whether that is the teacher's fat or someone's smells, because if they do, which is factual, you know, for things to that, to looking like they look defiant, they come across as cheeky. They are, I don't know how many times in primary I heard, "Oh, they're a handful. He's a handful. He's a handful." That's what they are. And it's such a massive spectrum that it's so, so difficult. They can't, one thing that we do know about FASD is when they're listening to any verbal interaction, any verbal instruction, or just any verbal communication, the way their brains on average process is around, they process around every third word you are saying to them. So they are the children who look like they don't listen in class, and they don't listen to instruction when they are listening, and they are hearing it, but their brain is processing about every third word.
Yeah. So the classroom environment then is really not set up in any way for a child with FASD, because obviously the constraints that the curriculum and that teachers are under in moving through the work is is not aligned to how a child with FASD, how their brain works. So I imagine, you know, intervention from specialists and from tutors is fairly common. And maybe that would be a great place, you know, given that children with FASD may struggle with the school environment, how then can we use and implement tutors to help with this condition? What can tutors do in a tutoring setting?
I wish it was common. I really, really wish it was common. Unfortunately, many, many, many children with FASD are just falling under the radar and are disengaged with education and are unsupported because nobody's understanding their needs, whether that be parents, professionals, teachers. It's quite significant, actually, how many children aren't supported. And I do wish that it was the case that many were supported by tutors. One thing that we are focusing heavily on at the minute with our own podcast is the need for education staff to start learning about FASD, because the current prevalence rates of this condition show that there's possibly one child in every single classroom. Like, that's how the numbers break down. So every teacher will have come across a student with FASD in their career, possibly every year. And so what we want to do, what we really, really want to promote and to support, is tutors understanding, educators understanding this condition, and truly understanding to a point where they can see the strengths of each individual and completely adapt everything that they do. This is really, really about bespoke interventions that play to the strengths of the individual, because they do have strengths. They do have a lot of strengths, but you need to tap into that and adjust absolutely everything that you do in order for them to receive the support they need in terms of education.
Yeah, great. Okay, so let's dive into that a bit more. What we imagine that a typical tutoring setting, where perhaps the tutor is sat next to or across from the student and they're working on a piece of work, what do you see as the immediate barriers to learning there for an FASD student? What can a tutor get up, move around, do to aid with the dip in the concentration levels that may occur?
Know your time frames. The fact that you're sat at a table is probably a bit of a barrier to begin with.
Yeah, I was about to say, get outside.
Yeah.
Get outside, go in, I mean, post-COVID, go and sit in a well-known coffee chain, go and sit on a bench if you're near a beach, sit on a beach, get kind of like the sitting. They cannot learn in what we view as a stereotypically, like a typical and education setting. So sitting down at a desk and you've got your pen and paper, you've got your laptop, and this is what we're going to do. That doesn't work for them. But they are, if we get them in the right situation, they are more than capable of learning. So know that maybe, and their brain, and this is what I've learned from my children, their brains are wired in a completely, completely different way to how a brain is meant to be wired. And it's not a neural difference, it's a brain injury. It's a huge, huge difference. Lots of, there's a lot of crossover. A lot of children with FASD are autistic as well. And a lot of the traits are identical. However, autism is a neural difference. FASD is a brain injury. It's a trauma to the brain. So that's something that we always need to be mindful of. But certainly my children, because their brains, they're kind of like chameleons. They are like Navy SEALs of survival, their brains. So they will reroute, they will find a way, and they've got these super fast paths to solving problems. So certainly my two boys, I've got two boys and a girl. One of my boys, he's just got a purely engineering brain. So he'll look at something and I might be struggling with something, and he'll go, if you turn that on its side and put that upside down and then put that into there, that works. Like, are you a moron? You know, that's his, looking at me like he can't understand why my brain didn't work that out. My brain would never have been able to work that out in a million years. So they've got such huge, huge skills. And if he is feeling confident and safe, because one of the big problems for children with FASD is they hover around fight or flight all the time. They're just on the precipice of it all the time. So a noise, a particular word, certainly, right, come on, then what we're going to do, if we get this done as fast as you can, then we can get finished as fast as you can, and then your time's your own. Oh, that like feels like they're getting chased up the stairs off somebody, and they're going to fight or flight, and then they're just that's it. You've lost them completely for the full session. It just looks like they're then being a little bit cheeky. They're just ignoring you. They're being lazy. And it's not. That part of the brain's gone offline. They are incapable of learning at that point. So I think certainly, like Jess said, knowing your time frame. So if you are doing an hour's tutoring with a child with FASD, you are not doing an hour's tutoring with a child with FASD. That is setting them up to fail. If you spend an hour with them, because there's a huge social element that is vital to them. Spend an hour with them. You may get 20 minutes of concentrated work done, which would be phenomenal. But know that that was a triumph. Know that that is a triumph. That is not you not getting the remaining 40 minutes of work in. That's triumphant. And that is enough. That is absolutely enough. And what is equally important is that you've spent the time, you've had a little bit of a chat, or you've watched something, you know, something on YouTube. There's so many different ways of learning. This is, you know, quite controversial. My boys particularly, actually, and my daughter as well, they have learned beyond anything that I think they could have learned in school via YouTube over the past 2.5 years. Like just fascinating things that they've picked up. So it's about being brave enough and vulnerable enough and comfortable enough as a professional, as an education professional, to think these children need us. You don't even think outside the box. There is no box. There is no FASD shaped box. It doesn't exist. We wish it did. It doesn't. We've tried every shape. It doesn't.
Yeah, I'm hearing two things here, Claire. First of all, that the idea of what a tutor is expected to do does not correlate with how an educator needs to work with a child with FASD. And that's a huge step for tutors, because we're told day in, day out about the best strategies and the best techniques and how you need to make sure that your student is listening and not distracted. And actually, that's not how the brains of children work 100% of the time. So the first thing I'm hearing is that we need to rework and rewire the way that tutors are expected to work with many children. Because as you say, that the evidence from recent studies on FASD show that what you were saying there, Jessica, that it's can be up to kind of, you know, statistically could be one child in every classroom, you know, between, I think the percentages were between 6 and 17% of children or of people in the UK suffer from an FASD. And the second thing I'm hearing is that this podcast itself needs to go up on YouTube then, Claire. If your children are ever going to access it, then it needs to go right onto YouTube so that they can find it in and amongst their brilliant other videos. So I think perhaps we could move into that a little bit further. Is for a tutor who's listening to this, who has their own who has the conventional way of working at a tutoring session, what else can they work on in and around the session to help with an FASD child who they're working with? We've mentioned that there's changing the environment of the session or changing the time frames. Is there anything else that you guys can think of?
I would say to throw everything they know out of the window. And that's probably not what people want to hear, and it's probably a little bit scary, but honestly, you have to turn everything that you know on its head. Not everything you know as an educator, everything you know as a human, everything that you do to interact socially with other people, turn it on its head. You need to change your language, your body language. You need to be very, very aware of the environment, not just change the environment, but be very aware of their needs, of their triggers. It's a complete shift in mindset to be able to support those with FASD. And I think Claire often says that she puts in so many interventions within a 24-hour period for her own children that she would struggle to list them, because it's turning everything that you're familiar with on its head. So you really, really need to spend a lot of time getting to know the individual first, having a really clear picture of them and their needs, and be very aware of the fact that you won't know that there's anything going on, and that they will mask it for a number of weeks or days, even months. And that, as Claire mentioned before, that they are hearing what you're saying, but it's unlikely that they're processing it. So they're hearing it, and they could quite possibly repeat it perfectly back to you, but it doesn't mean that it's been learned. So I think you need to be very, very aware of all of those things in order to be able to support a child with, or a young person with, FASD.
If I ever find myself in a situation where I can do minimal handover to somebody, to some kind of a professional who has to deal with my child and they don't know anything about FASD, I say, lower your expectations, think toddler. So if you're a tutor and you are getting a year 7 little girl to help, you've got a year 3. But she looks like a year 7, she might look like a year 10 if she likes her makeup and her hair done. So that is what is in front of you. So as a human, that is what you are processing. Her language skills, the way she will be able to communicate with you, will probably come across as older than she is. There's a brilliant infograph. I'll hunt it out and I'll send it to you. There's a brilliant infograph, and it shows you the actual age of a young person with FASD, and then around it, it's all little shapes of bodies, and it shows you where all of their other areas of development, what age they're at. So, you know, emotionally, and her social skills, executive functioning, will be around year 3. So when I have had tutors in the past deal with, certainly with my daughter, that would be what I would be saying. Lower your expectations, half our age. So what would you do with a child half that age? What would you do with a 6.5-year-old? What would you teach them? Where would you start? What kind of resources would you be using? And it's very, very difficult, because you think that, well, it just goes against you. You're looking at this child and you think that, well, that, I don't think that's right. I'm sure I can push them a little bit harder, but that is one of the best things that you could do, and then move at their pace. But the kind of resources that a young child would enjoy using, a child with FASD will, in the right setting, do it in the wrong way, and it'll be like, why are you doing that? What are you doing that for? I don't need them. I'm not a baby. I'm not a kid. Like, so it's like, oh, it is. It's so rewarding. And when you get a breakthrough moment, it's life changing. And this is my life, but it's career changing as well. The people, the professionals, certainly the education professionals who have had the, you might say, misfortune, who've had the luck to fall into our lives, without fail, all of them, it's had a massive impact on their careers, and they've either gone more specific in FASD, they've started to help other people learn about it. It's changed the way they teach, the way they see everything. So it's, there is so much to be learned, and you know, it's prolific. The numbers, you know, it's huge, absolutely huge. And not tricky. It's not that it's difficult to teach, it's just, it is impossible to teach in a classic mainstream environment. Impossible. And they're big words, but I believe that to be true.
Well, all the more for tutors and teachers working together then, because we don't want to get rid of schools, because that would not serve a helpful purpose. So why not reduce the workload on teachers and schools by allowing specialists and experts to come in and help out? I think that if that only furthers the argument for such a model. But perhaps kind of, we've gone through a few strategies, we've gone through some tips, we've covered an array of points and areas that tutors have to look out for if they work with an FASD, a child with FASD. But what are the steps that a tutor can take today if they are due to be working with a child with FASD, or if they want to help out with working with a child with FASD? If they hear this podcast and they feel that is an area they can help with, what steps can a tutor take today?
Learn about it. Great. Learn about it. And I speak from experience here, because I was 2 years into my PhD before I'd ever met somebody with FASD. I had read everything that there was to read at that time. And when I first met a child with FASD, I froze on the spot and thought, don't know what I'm doing here. I'm not equipped at all. But the amount of resources has improved, increased significantly in the last few years. And one of the first places that I would direct people is to a fantastic resource guide online that was developed by the team within NHS Ayrshire and Arran, the FASD advisory and support team that were within NHS Ayrshire and Arran. And they've developed a guide that's free, it's online, it's a PDF, and it's what educators need to know. And it's a beautifully visual book as well. Like, it's really, really nicely presented. It's really, really clear, and it's just kind of point by point. And I think that's as good as a starting point as you're going to get before you meet the child that you're working with, because no book can prepare you. And I still stand by that, but you need to have a foundation of understanding before walking through the door.
And I've heard that there's a podcast called Spotlight on FASD, which is a brilliant resource.
Yeah. So
if you listened to that, that would be a really good starting point. But I think, in all seriousness, one of the many strengths that Jessica and I have working together is, Jessica's the just about doctor. She's the brains, and she's like, you know, this, frontal cortex, and what does all? And I'm like, I'll tell you what that looks like. That looks like one of them's hanging from a banister, and the other one's like, you know, I give the real life translation of what that looks like. And that's what the podcast is full of, all of these real life examples of what it looks like and how you are able to deal with it and how you're able to help children. One huge tip for tutors is, if you think about what we've talked about a lot of the verbal stuff, visual guides. So if you're about to do a piece of work, instead of a verbal instruction of, well, I want you to read those two chapters, then I want you to do that, then I want you to do that, like, they've lost you at, I want you to read, that's gone. And then it might look like, I don't want to do that, but actually they haven't really understood what you've asked them to do, and they feel too embarrassed, because a one-on-one tutor situation is ideal. It's the best chance you can get to get the environment right. However, it is such an intense pressure on our children. Intense. It is like them running a marathon, because they've got this one-on-one interaction. It's not diluted by anyone else. So it is the best situation, but it's still very difficult for them. So if you have whatever it is that you're doing, if you have it visually on paper, on the desk, on a screen, so all the time they're referring to that, that takes pressure off. And again, that would probably be something that you would think they would reach a certain age and they wouldn't need that. They'll always need that. What's the harm? What's the harm in it being there? You know, every child would always benefit from that. So that would be a really, that would be up there with a top tip for me, definitely.
Okay, great. Well, what a wonderful way to finish that then. We've kind of taken our tutor from today, but of tomorrow, who is going to do a little more research into into FASD, is going to subscribe to the Spotlight on FASD podcast, is going to watch some helpful and well-made YouTube videos about how learning, or what learning looks like for a child with FASD, and really, hopefully we can encourage more tutors to work in this area. There's thousands of tutors out there, and many of them are put to work helping with a great range of special educational needs and disabilities. And I think the important message from today, I think you'll both agree, is that FASD is right up there with the most important ones, given largely its prevalence
absolutely
amongst the population. Thank you both very much for joining. As I said, in the show notes below, there will be the links to the Spotlight on FASD podcast, as well as the What Educators Need to Know, the FASD advisory and support teams, the free guide online that can help you get started. And I think it would be a good idea, perhaps, after the end of your season, this current podcast season on education, just to loop back and find out kind of what you guys have learned from this season and what tips that you've gained or that you've learned that can help our listeners. So we'd love to have you back on. Thank you both very, very much for joining me. I hope you enjoyed sitting on the other side. You certainly, I can tell, have a whole lot more to add than I perhaps gave you space for. But
it's a brilliant start. It's wonderful that we're having this conversation, because I do totally agree. You know, sometimes I've found myself in the middle of the night thinking, what would the ideal be if I could just manage a few hours in school for the social aspect, maybe a little bit of PE, but then they had a tutor who it was one-to-one. You know, to me, that is the perfect scenario, the perfect situation. And we need to reach the point where no one bats an eyelid at that. That's a normal way for that child to learn, because that's what they need. They're not having this, you know, bespoke, it needs 55 meetings to organise and, ooh, I've never done that before. It's that's how they learn. Why can't they learn like that? So that's where we need to be. As you can tell, like, Jess and I will not stop until that is where we are. So, and I think, you know, it goes without saying that if there are any tutors listening to this who may be working with a child with FASD, might have been a little bit wary, thinking they don't know what they're doing, if they start working with a child with FASD and they have any kind of a question or a query, please get in touch with us at the podcast. Please get in touch with us, because that is what we are there for, and we absolutely will be able to help, and we would love to help.
Thank you both very much for that. We'll put your contact details below, and I'm sure, hopefully, there'll be a flood of messages that come in. Hopefully that doesn't take up too much of your time. Thanks again, both of you. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Qualified Tutor podcast, where tutors share their expertise to support the tutoring community. If you'd like to continue the conversation, join our Qualified Tutor community at www.qualifiedtutorcommunity.org or find it in the show notes below. We exist to connect, share, and learn with you, because tutoring is a small job that makes a big difference.